the spaces after the panel to have your questions for Jaya and others. I know I have to acknowledge certain people in the room who have graced us with their presence. Dr. Jean Plaisir from City College is here. Thank you for being here. And I have a group of students, of my own students at City College, was here. I'm very proud that they were able to make it. The next speaker is someone that I've known for a long time. She's a powerful woman also. And she's Angie Cruz. Angie Cruz was born and raised in the Washington Heights section of New York City. She's a graduate of SUNY Binghamton and received her MFA from New York University. Her fiction and activist work have earned her the New York Foundation of the Arts Fellowship, the Barbara Deming Memorial Fund Award, and the Bronx Writers Center Van Leer Literary Fellowship. Cruz lives in New York City, where she co-founded WILL, Women in Literature and Letters, a collective devoted to social change through artistic expression. I'm a second language learner, okay? She's at work on a second novel, and I had the opportunity of being a participant of WILL Workshop. Thank you for your gift. Welcome, Angie Cruz, with me, please.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Mary, and everyone that it took to put this thing together. I'm an organizer, and I know how difficult it is. It looks so easy. Everyone just shows up, and it's great, and it's usually a lot of emails and stuff, so thank you for all the organizers. And this is also my second time that I'm in a public setting with 21 División, and it's so great. And thank you so much for your music. It really, it's como una limpieza para el cuarto. And it felt very good, because I feel right now I've been really anxious. I have a lot of anxiety because, we're much more aware of what's going on around the world than usual. But we're always in war in one way or another. And now that we're more aware, you feel the anxiety everywhere. And it was really wonderful to have your music. So thank you for that gift. What I'm going to do is I'm going to read from my novel, Soledad. I wrote this book. It came out 2 years ago. And it's about this girl. She grew up in Washington Heights. And she left home. And she made a big move from uptown Washington Heights down to the village. And she didn't see her family for like 2 years. And she comes back because her aunt is calling her back because her mother's like this, in this emotional coma. And I'm supposed to be talking about immigration. And I was born here in Washington Heights. And I spent a lot of my life, I feel like, with 1 foot here and 1 foot in Dominican Republic. Because even though I lived here, I was always being sent back to stay out of trouble. No. As if you can't get into trouble in another country. But I'm going to read just very short excerpts. One is when Soledad returns back to Washington Heights, and one when she goes and takes the trip back to Dominican Republic. So, and then I'll talk about how I wrote the book. Okay. It's always like that. Just when I think I don't give a shit about what my family thinks, they find a way to drag me back home. A few weeks ago, I received this urgent phone call from my aunt Golda. You have to come home, Soledad. Your mother's not doing so good. Golda expects a fight from me. She tells people that I was born con la pata caliente, feet burning to be anywhere but here. I say, it's more like those travel and leisure magazines my mother borrowed from the offices she cleaned that did it. When most kids wanted to go to Disney World, I begged to go to Venice so I could ride one of those gondolas. Even my earliest pastel drawings were of pagodas, the Leaning Tower of Pisa, and Machu Picchu. In some ways, the travel and leisure fantasy continues, because without trying, I led my family to believe that I left 164th Street to live in the school dorms, which I kind of described to be more like high-rises with a view of the East River and really great showers. For 2 years, they've had no idea. Every time I step inside my East Village walk-up on the corner of 6th and A, I feel guilty. Everything about it, the smell of piss, the halls as wide as my hips, The light bulb in the lobby that flashes on and off like cheap disco lights reminds me of my deception. But if they knew the truth and how much I was paying for it, they declare me insane and send my Uncle Victor to tie me up on the hood of his Camaro and bring me back home, kicking and screaming. When I first moved downtown and people where I worked asked me where I was from, I used to say the Upper West Side, vaguely. Oh, I really love it up there, they said, no doubt picturing Central Park and hordes of yuppified New Yorkers rollerblading on a Sunday afternoon, restaurants with outdoor seating that serve Italian gelato and crepes. I said it for so long that even I forgot that to most people, Washington Heights is not even considered Manhattan. It's more like the Bronx. And because I knew that people associated what they saw on the news with the place I grew up in, a war zone filled with cop killer, killer cops, crack dealers, gang members, and lazy welfare mothers, I convinced myself that embroidering the truth about my living on the upper West Side was my way of keeping nasty stereotypes of Washington Heights out of people's minds. But then I said it in front of my roommate, Caramel. She's a Chicana from Texas running away from the heat. When I told her I was from the Upper West Side, she cringed and looked at me pityingly. How can you stand it up there? She asked, horrified. It's like Gringolandia. I wasn't sure what she meant by that exactly. I just knew it was bad. It felt worse than being called a Blanquita back home, a sellout, a wannabe white girl. So to calm her down, I told her the truth. I'm from Washington Heights. In a loud Texan accent, she boomed, then say it like it is, mujer. Washington Heights. As soon as I arrive on 164th Street, I'm attacked. I trip on the uneven sidewalk. The air conditioner spit at me. The smell of onion and cilantro sting my eyes. I start to sneeze. The humidity is thick. Sweat beads drip on the small of my back. Hydrants erupt, splashing cold water over the pavement. I know I should turn back while I still can, before anyone in my family sees me. But when pot-bellied, sockless men and pubescent homeboys call me mommy, as if I'll give them the time of day if they stare at me long enough, I know I must keep moving forward. The last thing I want to do is look lost or confused about where I'm going. There are more cops on the streets than fire hydrants. Merengue blares out of car speakers. The Dominican flag drapes in place of curtains on apartment windows. Sneakers hang from lampposts. Presidente bottles, pizza boxes, and old issues of El Diario burst out of the trash cans on the corner. A sight of Benin grills by the building's basement. That's a little taste of Washington Heights for those of you who've never been there. And now I'm going to just move 200 pages to the future. And Soledad has to make a journey back to Dominican Republic. Primo Bienvenido is driving us to Las Tres Bocas, a place that houses one of the greatest misterios on the island. Cristina, that's her aunt, has packed refrescos and pan de agua sandwiches with cheese and salchichón so we won't go hungry. Although Las Tres Bocas is only 2 hours away from Tia Cristina's house, we are taking the long way there. Golda mapped out a drive that goes from the small city Olivia was born in to the road that leads to Puerto Plata, all the way back up and around to Las Tres Bocas, our final destination. The air is thick and smells like salt water and burning wood. After the recent hurricane, many of the big trees are uprooted. The palm trees are slanted toward the ocean. Displaced zinc pieces are piled throughout the malecón. Trabajadores are placing bandages on broken structures, trying to open up businesses again as soon as possible. Children walking barefoot trying to sell peanuts in small cylinder bags, chase after cars. Men group on street corners and play domino. A military man carrying a rifle stops a young girl and flirts with her. Don't worry, Soledad. Estás en tu casa, Primo Bienvenido says as he looks at me through the car mirror. I'm not worried, I say defensively, and remember how every time I stepped out of line, my mother threatened to send me home. Home, República Dominicana home. Every time my mother says home, she means San Pedro de Macorís, and my grandmother means Juan Dolio, where her parents, my great-grandparents still live. It is clear that my grandmother's home in Washington Heights is temporary, until they make enough money to return home. Victor and Gola also call this place home. In the end, they are born and want to die on the island they think of as home. Home, rice and beans, apagones, plátanos, mango trees, Dia de los Muertos, strikes, warm beach weather, malecons, never having an election that doesn't get recounted. Home. It's like the U.S. now. In New York, they don't live, they work until we go home. My mother always told me that home is a place of rest, a place to live. Thank you. So basically, a lot like Jaira, like the whole idea, I didn't see myself as a writer. I mean, and it's actually great to be in a context of teachers and to see so many young people, because I feel like, you know, I meet these students, and at your age, I had no idea that there were Latina writers or that there was a Dominican writer out there. And maybe at that time, I don't know, but it was not that it was that long ago, but what I want to talk about is imagination and the lack of, like, how my imagination, I didn't have even the imagination to see myself as a writer because I didn't have any role models. And I went to New York City Public School for my whole life, and it wasn't until I was like 21 years old and I went to SUNY Binghamton for college. And that was after being in college here 4 years at FIT, Professional Institute of Technology, that I discovered that there were African-American writers and Latina writers. And I said, wow, like, I felt really gypped. I said, why did it take me so long to realize that I could be a writer? For the longest, even though I might have wanted to aspire to something like that, I always thought that to be a writer, you had to be dead, white, and male. So I don't know how they died before they wrote the book, but, you know, if for me, those are the kind of books that I was exposed to. So it wasn't until I got to college and I started reading these books and I started getting excited, and I read Sandra Cisneros' House on Mango Street, and I read Christina Garcia's Dreaming in Cuban, and I read Toni Morrison's Beloved, that I said, oh my God, I identify with these books, and they resonated like as if they were very close to my experience, but at the same time, I also felt like they weren't telling a story that was very close to me, and that I said, why isn't anyone writing about Washington Heights? You know, like this must be something to write about. And that's how I started Soledad. And I feel too like it was through reading that my imagination started to expand, and I started to realize that I didn't only have to write about things that I know, but things that, the questions that, you know, like the questions of why do these things happen, and, you know, and even today, like, I'm working on my second novel, and I'm working on a novel about this Chinese Dominican man who's like has been revolutionary, and he basically lost his memory at the age of 12, so doesn't remember how he landed on Dominican Republic as a Chino, you know, as a Chino, and nobody knows how he landed in Dominican Republic either. So he has to go and look through history books, but there's nothing written really about the Chinese and Dominican Republic, so he has to make up the history. And I was thinking about how important it is for us, especially the young people, to think about that, you know what, even if you're writing in your journals, or even if you're just, you know, repeating your story to other people, that's the way we're going to have to document our stories, you know, one way or another. So if you know, if someone does fall into the middle of someplace with amnesia, they could say, oh, well, at least I have a history here, and it's been documented, and it's written. And for me, like, that's the place that writing, for me, a lot, my writing is a lot about answering those questions for myself and also documenting the things that I see. Like, we are witnesses with everything that we're experiencing. Recently someone said to me, oh my God, are you writing about the war? You know, what are you doing about it? Like, are you writing about it? You know, and I said, yeah, I've always been writing about war. War of the spirit, every day. And to think, you know, when I feel like when Mary calls me, I've actually been not trying to do public appearances because I'm trying to write a book, so I'm very, like, I'm a hermit, you know, I spend all my time at home and I don't talk to anybody. And I came out because the opportunities for Haitian and Dominican communities to come together are so seldom. And it is such a violent relationship in Dominican Republic, and it's very painful as a person from here to go there because you're telling everyone, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be doing this. You're not supposed to be saying those things. And, You know, it's like a constant fight because it's also a lack of imagination that people can't see other people as human beings, even though there's difference, you know, or maybe not so much difference. So I just want to open that up, and I'm curious to hear the questions that are going to come through, and thank you all for being here.